This was your first applause, so...
Thank you so much. Okay, hi everyone. So, Magic Lantern. There's so much... I wanted to put so much into this talk, and I've did this talk in different formats and different places, on Linux Talk, for example, this year in Berlin. And sometimes it's a crowd that's more technically interested, sometimes a crowd that's more interested in filmmaking and that part, and I think with Magic Lantern it all kind of comes together. So some people are really using it for documentary filmmaking or for short filmmaking, and some others are using it professionally for advertisement and all that stuff. And since the project has really grown a lot in this year mostly, so you get all these different kinds of people under one project. And also, I'll try and keep all the philosophy behind it out, because I want to make this a more practical talk. But maybe you just can keep in mind that a lot of stuff is reflected here. For example, the talk 2 years ago by Doktorov about the war on general purpose computing, the fact that everything is a computer now, like a car is a computer with four wheels and that stuff, and here you've got like a camera is a computer with a light sensor and some input output, I think, and some code signing. I think that's what's happening here as well. So keep that in mind and see how it all comes together while I go through the more practical side of it. So what's Magic Lantern? It's obviously a free open source software team project. It's a collaboration from people from all over the world. It all started with one guy in America. He figured out how we could sign our own firmwares. And from there on, it was all about figuring out the internals of the camera, finding hooks into the system, and getting in there, and figuring out how the different chips work together and what we can do with it. So, like trying to find out where are the hardware limits, what are the physical limits we cannot get over, but what can we achieve in software? And it's developed just by hobbyists, by some people in their spare time. There's no money involved. We even stopped donations because we wanted to keep it played safe for the moment. And so I'll just try and give you an overview about how it all started with DSLRs in general, like how did they first start to make movies with it, and what happened then, what happened next. So. Basically, such a camera here, that's a 5D Mark II by Canon. And I think it's 5 years old now. So it's not the newest model. There's a 5D Mark III by now, and there are much cheaper cameras, but still you can get this one for like 1,500 euros. So it's affordable in a way. If you compare the functionality of this thing after you put Magic Lantern on it to really high level, expensive movie making film cameras from Hollywood, and how it all holds up together, it gets really interesting. But they were never meant for advanced film work, and yet there are a lot of things you have to be aware of and work your way around. But things have gotten a lot, very much, much, much better compared to before. So we try to add this functionality, and it's not just for filmmaking. I'm very interested in filmmaking, so that's probably why I'm talking about that so much. But we've also added a lot of photo functionality, and I'll try to go into that as well. So just, you see, there are some movies, even Hollywood movies, that were exclusively or predominantly made with DSLRs. And so there are, even in where you don't have to look for your budget that much, there can be situations where it makes sense. For example, this propaganda movie, it kind of uses DSLRs to strap them on the helmets and throw them out of a car and everything. And you couldn't do that with the big Arri Alexa cameras or with that kind of stuff. Or you wouldn't want to do that maybe because it really gets expensive. And so they managed to do it. There are problems with the image and what you can do with it, but if you know what you want to do and how you want to do it, even for them, DSLRs might be an option. So I've tried to make a list of challenges So, like, I thought I'd just make this list at the beginning of the talk so everyone sees that these LRs are, you cannot compare them to the big cameras, and there are a lot of problems. But we'll try and solve all these through the talk, and I'll try and give you options on how to fix that. So, there's no autofocus. I think that is something. Usually when you get a camera, a film camera, VHS camera, or now some digital camera, like for your holiday season, then you expect the camera to have a proper autofocus. And these things, they don't have autofocus. So you do it manually, like you did it years ago. You've got your lens, and then you focus by hand. And you have to get a feel for it, like the distances and how far you can, how difficult the scene can be. So they introduced autofocus, but just in a very simple way, and it's going to get better. But up until now, it's still something you have to do by hand. And I mean, for film work, for like if you do a short movie or something, you probably won't have to worry about that so much, because if you've got a situation on set where the situation is controlled, then you know where your actors are going to walk, you know where your actors are going to stand, and you can reshoot your scene. So if you mess up the focus, it's not that much of a problem. But if you do a documentary, you have a situation that won't happen again, and you just have to get the focus right, then maybe it's not the right camera for you. On the other hand, autofocus, it never really works perfectly. There's always problems. So yeah, it's about pros and cons, and you have to figure that out. On the other hand, if you really want to do movies on a budget now and hope to get there eventually and do movies later on with a bigger budget, it's like the perfect way to get a hang of pulling focus manually. Because it's just the same if you've got a 35 millimeter camera or that kind of stuff. You just have to get a feel for it, and that helps. So then there's rolling shutter. As the sensor is read out, it might not be as fast as what's happening in your scene. There's like a global shutter and a rolling shutter. Global shutter cameras, they don't suffer from these problems. For example, I think you all know it. You're on the highway driving in a car, and you're filming out of the window, and all the lines that get skewed when you watch it later on. That's because of the rolling shutter. And there's nothing we can do about it. It's hardware-based. So there's some filters they use, optical hardware filters you can put in there, but it's nothing we can solve on the software side. You just have to live with it and figure a way around it. You can maybe help it a bit in post, but it's a lot of work to get it right. Then there's Moray. Moray is like the idea of these cameras, they have very big sensors, like much larger than what you know from your typical movie cameras. Not like the big film cameras from Hollywood, but as compared to everything else you've got, like these sensors, like the size of your fingers or something like that, they're much larger, and they cannot compress all the information, like 16 or 20 megapixels, in that short amount of time, 30 times per second. So what they're doing, they're not reading all the lines of the sensor and then scaling it down, but they just skip some lines, like they read every fifth line. So you skip over four lines, and it's like this, if it's, you know it. Moray is like you get these interferences. If you got straight lines from the sensor and some non-straight lines in your work, like a brick wall, or someone is wearing a shirt or something like that, these lines, they interrelate, and it's like a meshy Moray pattern that happens and can look very not pleasing. So either you take care of what your actors or models are wearing, or you have to try and solve it in post, but it doesn't really work. There's no simple solution for that. The latest Canon camera, the 5D3, the model after this one, they have improved that a lot. And then there are optical filters you can insert to improve that. So if you really need top quality, there are some solutions. Then about the codec, that's probably the biggest thing. Because these cameras, they record video on a consumer codec, on H.264. And that's 8-bit as well. So it's a codec that it's like you're doing photo editing in Photoshop in a few steps, And after every step, you save it as a JPEG. And then you open it again, and you make some color corrections, then you save it again. The coding is not meant for that. So it's very nice for just shooting away and not grading a lot in post. But if you want to, for example, you want to lift the black levels to get some more information in the black area, or you want to pull down the brightness parts of your image to improve that, then there is some information, but at some point it's just going to collapse. There's nothing left, because that's exactly what the codec is doing, is trying to throw out all the information you can't see. So we found ways to figure that out, and I'm shooting in H.264 still, sometimes, most of the times, but you know how to do it. 8-bit means it's the color information. So it's not just that it's compressed, but the color information is not that big. Like if you have a nice gradient on the screen and you're filming an 8-bit per channel, then you can see those lines where the color information doesn't hold up. It's like an index 256 paletted image. Yeah, you can see those. But I'll go into that later a little bit. There's a recording limit of 4 gigabyte, and there's like a 30-minute limit. I mean, most of what I'm saying, telling you now is not related to Canon. It goes for every DSLR camera. Right. If I'm talking too fast, maybe someone can point that out. So this limit, it's introduced because of laws in Europe where you have to pay different taxes if you import a movie camera, or it's just a photograph. So they introduced that. It's just an arbitrary software limit. It's not even related to the file system or anything in all cases, but that's why they do it. They have to pay extra if they don't want to do that. Then in full HD, you can go up to 30 frames per second. So that's okay, that's what you're expecting from the television. But if you want to do slow-mo shooting or something like that, you have to go down to 720p, to a small HD, and then you get more moire because you've got more line skips and you cannot pull it up. It's okay for the web, but it's not really, you can't use it in a feature movie, really, it won't work. But still, it's nice to experiment with it. And I mean, some of these DSLRs, they cost like, what, 300 euros now, and I mean the fancy stuff you can do nice stuff with. So there's no pro audio, you got no XLR inputs, it's not symmetrical, you have to find solutions for that. And there's a time code, with the exception of the 5D3, the top model that is supported by Magic Lantern, because we don't touch the higher level models. And so time code, you usually use it, and in an event like this, you've got three or four or five cameras, and you're trying to sync them all up, and you want everything to sync per frame, or even better than that. So if you've got no time code, you have to do the syncing in your editing software later on, and that costs a lot of time. There are software solutions for that, and I'll go into that as well, but just keep it in mind. If you buy the big ones, you've got time code, you've got professional audio input, you've got most of these problems you don't have. And there is HDMI output, so when I'll try to show you Magic Lantern later on, and I'll do that via HDMI. That's also a consumer thing. You don't have professional SDI outputs, so you either need a converter box on the set, or you don't use it. Also, for most cameras, once you play hit the record button and the camera starts recording video, the signal that is sent out through HDMI is reduced to 480p, so focus pulling through that is like, you can't do it. So lots of problems. But there are also lots of advantages. I'll just go through them very quickly. The slides will be online later on. You can look at that. So the price, obviously, that's very nice. Then you've got the professional resolution and frame size and frames per second. They're very small. So they're inconspicuous. For example, you go to Russia, you do a documentary, and you don't want to be noticed so much, probably. Then it can be a good idea to just take a small 600D or something, put a 50 millimeter on it, do professional video, use it in post, mix it, nobody will notice. I think that's going to change in the next years. Like in 10 years, the police, they probably will will have understood that, but for now it's nice. Also, the rigs, they are not so expensive. You can get like a shoulder rig or something, or a stabilizing thing for these small lightweight cameras. You can do all this on a budget if you want to. Also, you've got picture styles. That's like lookup tables. Professional cameras, they've got those lookup tables where they take the whole latitude of the color information and they have to compress it down to 8 bits or 12 bits or whatever they are supporting. And you can through those lookup tables specify what color information you want to throw away and what color information to keep. For example, you've got an interview, we've got a lot of face, and you want to keep the skin tones. So you take a lookup table, a picture style, they call it on the Canon cameras, and you try to keep all the information for the skin tones and throw away the blacks and the whites, for example, because you really want the people to look natural and healthy. Also, the lenses, the glass is not so expensive. You can get some basic lenses for affordable prices. For example, you can go on eBay and go shopping for cameras from Russia, for lenses from Russia, like the stuff they did in the 70s and 80s. You'd get an adapter ring. They don't have autofocus, but you can't use autofocus anyway. So you can get some really nice glass for like 30 or 40 euros and experiment with that as well. They've got their problems too, but hey, you have to start somewhere. Also storage, right? You just get those cheap cards. You don't need any SSDs or something like that. That's fine too. So I've talked about that as well. 8-bit, so the color information is reduced. There's compression artifacts. For example, you're filming in a windy scene, the trees are moving and all that stuff. That might be a problem. You don't have single frames. So H.264, it saves a full frame every X frames, and then it just keeps the vectors of the information for the next 5, 6, 7 frames, depends on it. So it can really degrade the image. What you want is an all I code, a codec where each image stands for itself. Also in post, because it can be very heavy for your computer if it has to calculate all those in-between frames from like 10 frames before. So when you're editing, you probably want to convert it before you edit it. And the blacks, lows, detail, I've talked about that. And sharpness can also be greatly reduced. So it really all sounds very, very dramatic. So what can I offer you as a solution? For audio, first of all, most of these cameras, when they were introduced, they had this fantastic functionality that was called automatic gain control. So what it was doing, like, if it was very, very silent in the room, then a lot of hish would be coming up, and then someone would say something, and all of a sudden, shoop, they were trying to guess the gain of the audio input, and that you couldn't turn that off because they were never meant for professional film work. So they introduced it in later firmware updates, but I think through Magic Lantern you were able to get it like half a year before. So turn it off. Don't use it. Don't use the internal preamp as well. It's like this small chip. It's really not very good. So if you want to do proper audio, you take a good preamp, you put it in front of your camera, from the mic through the preamp into the camera, and then you dial down the amplification of the camera to zero. You don't amplify at all, and you use your external amplifier. So you get a much cleaner signal. So for example, you can get an external preamp. There are some very small things. You can just strap on your camera and then put the microphone on top. That works very well. They are battery powered, for example. There are special microphones that have a very high output through an internal battery. Then you can also dial down the gain of your camera. For timecode and syncing, there is a software that's called Pluralize. It's really a great solution. I think Adobe Premiere and some others are introducing that by now as well. What they're doing is they're just comparing the audio of all your takes. For example, you've got 3 DSLRs in the room and maybe some audio recorder on the mixer. And then you throw all these files into Pluralize or some other software, and they will all match it up through the audio. And through my experience, it really works very well. It works on a frame basis. So all this syncing by hand that really is a lot of trouble, you can just skip that. And it's really fast as well. You put like 2 hours from 5 cameras into that stuff, and you just hit sync, and then you drink a coffee, and after that, you're good to do your cutting. So for audio, probably do it externally. For example, when I'm on the field, I've got like one of these things. They're not so expensive, and they've got XLR input, and they can supply the microphones with power as well. And I just strap it on here, and I sync it up in post. So I just use the audio from this camera so that my software can sync it up. But the person viewing my movies will never hear the sound from the camera. It'll just hear the sound from this proper or close to proper thing. Right. So for video, I've talked about picture styles. There's a blog post by Philip Bloom. He goes over all the different picture styles you can use. Like, you know, it's going to get very dark outside, or it's going to be very bright, or I'm going to film people. Use a proper picture style, and the color information that is compressed into your H.264 will look much better. Once you get a hang of it, I've got, like, I think I'm using 2 picture styles, and mostly I'm just using a very flat one that's trying to even out the whole thing, and then in post I do all the color grading. So that's a way to improve it. Don't do the sharpening of the camera. So there's a basic software sharpening functionality, but they have to do it like 30 times per second very quickly, so it's not very good. So you just turn it off and you sharpen on your computer later on. It's really much, much better results. Also, for focus pulling, because you have to do the focus manually on most of the DSLRs. On Canon, for example, it's these buttons up here. There's a plus and a minus. You start a camera, I'll show it later on. But you can, on the analog camera, you would like focus your subject, then zoom in completely, so then do your focusing, then zoom out to whatever level you want, and it helps you seeing if you really got the focus properly. And also you can use a digital zoom, and it crops into the sensor data, so it's not scaled up, but it really shows you the area. So if you have a control situation, or you know you're in a documentary and we really have to get this right, then you use the zoom buttons, focus quickly, don't touch it anymore, start recording. That's really a lot of help. You can use a viewfinder. A viewfinder is, I've got this thing for like, I don't know, 20 euros on eBay. You get it with a simple screen that you can glue on your camera, and then you put this thing on your camera like this, and if you're outside, it's very sunny, it helps you a lot, and it starts looking professional. Your customers, they like it. I never really understood about that, that's how it works. And also, if you're shooting with nothing, no rig, no stabilization, it really helps, because you can, if you've got your camera like this, you've got it on 3 points connected to your body, and it really stabilizes the camera a lot through just this thing. So if your shots are a bit too moving too much or something, that might be a solution as well. And it doesn't cost anything at all. So think about getting a rig at some point if you want to do proper stable shots. Think about quick release plates. You can just, these are so plates that you can put on your camera, and then you can easily exchange your camera through different tripods and stuff without having to screw this thing on and off and on and off, and at some point it's going to break, so it's probably a good idea to use quick release plates. I'll just skip this. I told you about that. If you use H.264 for your recording and you start editing, you might want to convert it into an all-I codec, for example into ProRes or whatever codec you like for your post, because it will really make the CPU load of your editing suite. It will take it down a lot, and you can throw in some more filters or whatever you want to do. So, yeah. The idea is you take your 8-bit footage, you denoise it if you want to with some software, Neat Video or something, take the noise out of it. Then you dither it. The idea is you just put a little bit of noise on top, digital noise, so that the problems of banding, like you see there's a gradient, but you can see how the colors are changing over the gradient. It looks like an old picture. You just dither it out. That's what you do in audio as well. Before the mastering step, you put in some noise to improve that. Then you you save that as a 10-bit codec, 10-bit ProRes, for example. You do your color grading, and if you want to, you can put some analog recorded noise from proper footage on top of it. And once you've done all of that, it's going to look really, really good. There's tutorials, right? If you want to do it, if you have to do it for something that's really important, not like your fun side project, but it's something that's going to be shown in a movie theater, that's probably the way you have to go. And that's probably how they did it in Hollywood as well. So that's all the overview of the DSLR world, and now comes Magic Lantern and the real fun part. So we tried to make this chart. Normal consumers, they just use their point and shoot cameras. They don't do manual focus. They just want to take it to their holiday season, and they probably won't use it. On the other hand, we've got some really nice auto functionality as well. Auto exposure, auto HDR, photo shooting and stuff. So even people that just want to have fun with it, I think they would like Magic Lantern. But we'll have to see if they take it up. So the home professionals, the semi-professionals, and people who are tinkering, I think they're the perfect crowd. And as for the professionals, so people using it on set for a shoot that's really it's related to money, from my experience, I mean, I've installed the latest Nightly build from like yesterday, I think. And I'm confident that it's going to work because I've used it for 2.5 years now. And these things, the builds, they are very stable. And the guys, the core developers, the core hackers from the team, they're really careful about what they change and what they put into the Nightly builds and what they don't. So it's up to you. But if you want to use it in the pro world, just give it a try, and it might just work for you. A bit about the history. In 2009, some guy, Tremel Hudson, he just started hacking on his 5D2, and he managed to find out how to sign the code, the firmware code, to install his own firmware stuff. But I'll go into that later on. But we are not flashing the firmware at all. The Canon firmware stays intact completely. It's something that is installed in parallel. That's why it's so stable. We're not changing the firmware. We're not flashing anything. We're changing like 2 or 3 bits, and it's not really dangerous. And we I go into that. I mean, it's like this. If you're experienced with this kind of stuff and you hear firmware, then usually it's like, OK, I'm flashing my firmware. That can't be good. Right? And you're not flashing your firmware. That's all I wanted to say. But obviously, we are changing something. That's how it works. So CHDK, that was another project. They did the hacking of the smaller Canon cameras. And we were able to use a lot of their code and a lot of their experience in this new project. And then in April 2009, there was the first code was released on Bitbucket. And everyone started going in there and adding patches and stuff. And the community mainly collaborated on a mailing list, wiki, and a Vimeo group. So then a new guy came in, Alex. He's the main dev still, and he's like this stereotypical benevolent dictator, you know, from Python and stuff. He gets it right, you know. The whole project is working perfectly, and there's 2 or 3 other people from the core, and for now it's really working very well, and it wouldn't be possible without these core people investing so much of their time, of their spare time as well. Then we had HDR video. That was a little hack. The idea of you take you alternate the frames, and each second frame gets a different exposure value. So we've got one bright and one dark image, one bright, dark, bright, dark, bright, dark. And then in post-production, you take the stream and make 2 streams out of it. And then you put it back together like an HDR photography. And you've got this enormous latitude of dynamic range. For those who are not familiar with it, if you've got an actor or someone, and you put him or her in front of a window, and it's very, very, very bright outside, and the inside is very dark, then you either have a completely overexposed outside world or an underexposed inside world. So if you've got 2 exposure levels and you mix them back together, you can have proper, the outside world is looking good and the inside world is looking good. So that was very nice, but there were problems with it because the frame rate is only 30p, and then you're alternating frames and all that kind of stuff. So it was just a hack. we've improved on that by now. But that's where Magic Lantern really got credits in the community, because some video was released of night scenes that nobody had seen before. I mean, the low light capabilities of these cameras is absolutely fantastic, but through that, these hacks, you were able to do shooting shots like with their problems, but they were, at least on Vimeo, they looked like footage from much, much, much more expensive professional film cameras. So then we started the whole Magic Lantern FM homepage, and that really got everything started. 2013 was completely crazy. It really exploded all over the place, and by now we've got 14-bit raw video, so that means, I'll go into that later on, but it's really good. And there's also dual ISO. I'll explain that when I show you the camera. Just so that you hear all these buzzwords just now, and then I can reference it. So there's a timecode generator. We can send out audio timecode, LTC timecode, through the audio out of the cameras. You can put that into your recording device, and you've got timecode. Or you can sync up a second camera to your camera. It's very beta, but I mean, it's all just software. Obviously, someone was able to implement it and send it out. There's a new on-screen display that's much closer to the professional film cameras if you're doing that kind of stuff. There are profiles, so you can have different configurations of Magic Lantern. For example, I know I'm on a photo shoot and I'm shooting portrait, or now I'm on a video shoot and I'm shooting night, and I just switch my profile and everything is changed in the camera. It helps me to really, also if you're documentary making and you can't really control the situation, then it's really great to have these pre-configured profiles. There's auto exposure to the right. Exposure to the right is a photography technique where you try to put your information as far right on the scale as possible so that you move away as much as possible from the noise. And that is completed automatically. It's usually a dangerous thing to do. You can't, if you do it wrong, you cut out some of the information. So everyone is a bit careful about it. But we are doing it automatically, so there you can't really mess it up. There's a new RAW file format, so for RAW video, it's getting more and more usable. Like you can just put it on a computer, the RAW files, convert them, and start editing or grading or whatever you want to do. There's an auto exposure that is also very much improved. You can actually define through functions how you want your auto exposure to work. Should the ISO change? Should the exposure change? What should be changed first? And that kind of stuff. There's advanced scripting in, I think. They've taken it out for a month or so, but it's going to be back. So everyone can just put in simple scripting if they don't want to hack at the C stuff. And there's a module system. So it's like in Linux, we try to keep the core small, and then we introduce modules that you can load. Additionally, because these things, they don't have that much memory, and we have to make sure that the memory is not crowded too much. So that helps, and also has some games now. Most cameras have been hacked, and I have a feeling that if Canon doesn't change something drastically, dramatically, and that would be quite a paradigm shift for them, If you buy a DSLR from Canon, then probably we've hacked it. And that's because they are not that different. I mean, obviously, the hardware changes. Sometimes it's different chips. But it's mostly the sensor and the input-output stuff. And then all the important stuff, for example, the body and all of that great stuff. So you can see we've touched most of them. And the community is really, really big now. So just the latest stable version was downloaded like 500,000 times by now or something. I'm not sure. But we expect that, we can't really expect. We have a feeling that Magic Lantern has been tried out by a lot of Canon users by now. For example, we've got 27 registered users in the forum. So that's not the lurking crowd that just downloads it and experiments with it. But these are the guys that actually registered in the forum and participate in the discussion there. That's 30,000 people. And the source code is, you can see it over there, 2003. Lots of source code changes. And the team is also quite large. So also as from a philosophical standpoint, how it all works out and how like reclaiming one's device ownership, all that kind of stuff, it's really reflected in this project. So, how are we working? So there's the core team is like the people who take all the pieces together. There's lots of patches coming in from all over the world, and someone has to organize it and decide which code is safe, which one is not. And also there's some people for some special topics. For example, one guy from Germany, he's very interested in the raw video functionality. He's putting a lot of effort in there. And some other guys, they take care of specific camera models. For example, one guy, he figured out how to put Magic Lantern on the 7D, and the 7D was very special because it has two processors and you have to sync them up properly. But he managed that, so he's taking care of that port still. And even if I said there's like a benevolent dictatorship, that's not really the case. I mean, everyone can chime in, and if they want to, they probably get their stuff into Magic Lantern at some point. For new developers, and we would love to have you with us if you're interested in hacking, the learning curve can be a bit steep. So we haven't documented everything and stuff. You have to go into the code. But the code, it's clean, except for like missing comments and stuff. But we're working on it, and it's going to improve as well. I mean, someone could just come in and try and help with the commenting if he knows what he's doing. Like, that's ever going to happen. Also, the community is really good. So if you want to hack, you probably can get someone help you in a Skype session, help you via IRC or something like that. All right, I'll have to speed up a lot. So I'll just skip this one. We know how to do this stuff. So I'll show you a bit of Magic Lantern, just like 5 minutes or something, so you get an idea of it. So I'll see if this works. I just have to show it to you. That's the whole point, right? And we'll see. There we go. So installation of Magic Lantern is really quick. It doesn't take a lot of time. And I'd say by now it's really safe. We have pricked, I think, 4 cameras in 3 years. And I mean, with 500,000 downloads, it probably shows you that. And you never know if it's hardware defects or if really Magic Lantern was the problem. So we're quite confident by now. OK, so this trash button, you use it when you are in the preview mode and you want to delete a picture. So you don't use that button when you're not in the preview mode, so we put the Magic Lantern menu there. It's a separate menu. It's a menu that is, you still have the Canon menu, like this here, and it just runs alongside with it. So I'll just quickly show you the menu here. So there's audio. You can do all kinds of fancy audio stuff. We even managed to introduce balanced audio. Then you just have to go into the forums if you really want to know how stuff works, because I just don't have the time right now. I'll just show it very quickly. Then there's exposure. There's exposure to the right, for example, that you can use here. There's dual ISO. That's really fantastic. It's they have two separate circuits for reading out the sensor, each alternate line. And we thought, hey, if there are two different circuits, maybe we can use one ISO value for one and a different ISO value for the other one. So now we've got HDR video without all those problems. It's really, you combine them with 14-bit raw video recording, and you can do a documentary run through a dark hallway into the bright lights, and you probably can fix it in post without ever changing your exposure. You have to experiment with that. I'm not sure if it works for all cases. Then there's global draw. That's really nice. I'll show you that. So I'll try not to film any of you. Here we are. That's magic zoom there. Usually when you are recording, you can't zoom in. You can only do it before you're recording. So like this, That was really helpful for focus pulling, but through this magic lantern hack, you can zoom in on your picture while you're recording. So that's helpful. And there's audio levels on top, and there's the temperature of your sensor, and all the different values you want to see at that point. And also, just change to this over here. You can introduce certain helps, like you can add crop marks, for example. Here we go. So if you're shooting a movie, you can crop mark your preview screen. There's tons of, you can add a ghost image, like overlay an image so that you can find the same spot you recorded in last time. You can, there's also focus peaking, which is very helpful to get your focus right. You can see where my focus lies right now. I'll just put this off, just a second. So focus pulling, I probably have to turn this off. This helps a little bit. So you see these lines? They're introduced where the computer thinks that your focus is at. That's really, really helpful as well. That's what I said in the beginning. It's just a computer with a sensor. We can do all that stuff with it because it's a computer, basically. So here, this movie, you can change the bitrate. You can improve the bitrate a lot for H.264 if you got very active scenes. There's gradual exposure. So if you change the exposure while you were recording, there were exposure steps, like it was jumping, getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And now we've tried to smooth them out. That's also a nice functionality. I'll try if I can show you this. Yeah, there it goes. There's no jumping. That's very nice. Then there's advanced bracketing features for photographers, for example, taking different exposure pictures of the same thing for HDR, or taking different different focus pictures to get an incredible focus of very close macro objects and stuff. Okay, there's focus helps. You can save focus points and go to them later on. For example, you've got your model is going to stand there and then it's going to stand there. So you save the focus point, you hit the button, and if you've got an autofocus lens, it goes to the correct focus point. And there's tons of other stuff and games and modules, and I can't show you. Right. Okay, so now for the real fun stuff. Oh, that's really great. 14-bit raw video. So the idea is you've got a sensor, and it's got this amazing picture for the photo, for the photographs, and it gets degraded so much by the limited video functionality. So we were always hoping that somehow we could get this raw footage without any degradation and just write it to the cards. Just take the stream, don't do anything with it, just put it there, and that would be fine. So everyone together, we manage it somehow. So you can do full HD, 24 frames per second, raw data, 14 bits, frame by frame recording at about 85 megs per second. So it's really a lot of data, and you need cards that can keep up with that. And it only works for the larger models, for like the 5D2, 5D3, that kind of stuff. But it also works for the smaller cameras. You just have to use lower resolution, but that's not so bad because even at lower resolution looks better than the H.264 in full HD. So you might find a way to work with that as well. And at 14 bits per pixel, it means you can really go into there and grade the hell out of it. You can take a professional grading software and change everything about the picture, and it's going to keep up. And that's where it's really starting to get professional. So that's what it looks like. If you don't do RAW, that's how it looks when you do RAW. Can you see the difference here? The details on the left. And also you can see it at the candle, right? That's completely overexposed, no information left, 8-bit. And here we're at 14 bits, and there's some, I bet you could even pull out some information from the candle spot. So the hardware details, I'm uploading the slides. If you're interested, just look at them. And the firmware details as well. So it's based on DryOS. It's called DryOS and based on Pico iTron 4. it's an arm thing, and if you're familiar with that kind of stuff, it's not that hard to get into it. And finally, what I want to talk about, I'll just skip this through, but the idea is we don't actually flash. I've told about that. We create a firmware file that is not a firmware file. You can read it here. Once you start the firmware updating process, we just jump into Mary, put our code there, execute it. It's like your usual what's happening in Firefox all the time as well, like that kind of stuff. And that enables us to run our own code, execute it in parallel in a different thread on the camera while all the original stuff is still running. And after you've done that, we figured out there was one flag we could change just a bit and change it into debug mode. And what this mode made, and that's what we're changing, everything else is not touched. Once the camera starts, it looks for a file called autoexecbin. If it's on your card, it's executed. So that's how we get there whenever you start your camera. We are not flashing anything. If you take a different card without Magic Lantern, you don't have Magic Lantern on the camera. That's why it's so safe. Where I'm at, I'd love to talk about legal issues. I'll make it short. Basically, we've been doing this for 2.5 years, and nobody knocked on our doors. There's no communication with Canon. I think it's probably best for both of us. But that said, I mean, we're writing our own code. We are not copying anything. And by now, I mean, if you're looking to buy a camera to do movie making, you know, you've got all these options. And then there's Magic Lantern for the Canon cameras. You might even argue that it's of benefit for them as well. So by now, with 30,000 people and 500,000 downloads, they probably just let us do our stuff for a while, and we'll see how it works out. That would be great. There are other projects. I think the other cameras are going to catch up at some point. I think RAW on the Nikon, it might happen. We'll see about that. And we don't know what's going to happen next, but we're probably going to find some other fancy stuff as well. So visit the website, join the community, help us hacking. That would be really great.
So, okay, thank you for this talk. So yeah. The Magic Lantern seems to be more than a little candle. Everyone who has questions, please find you at the microphones, the 1 and 2. And I think, are there questions from the internet? Okay. So, it seems to be, okay.
All right.
Then I have one thing to say. So if anyone has a car in the tunnel, or in German Unterführung, then please put it away, or it will be taken away. So run out and take your cars. Okay, so first question, please. Internet question? There are microphone problems, okay, now.
Just one at the moment.
Yeah.
How will plural I handle dropped frames?
I didn't get that, I'm sorry. Yeah.
How will plural I handle dropped frames?
Ah, okay. That's a very specific question about syncing up the footage. It does it. It manages. It keeps up. What you can do is you just split up your video in smaller chunks before you sync it up, and then it works even better.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
Sure.
Okay, the next question is at microphone 2.
Yeah.
I'm searching for the following feature. When I set my aperture manually and the exposure time automatically,
yeah.
And then I'm using the IS.
Yes.
Then I want to have some options that I can say, I want to have some risk to have,
yeah.
Which allows that I have 3 stops more exposure,
yes.
To have better ISO.
Yes.
Performance. Is this?
Have you experimented with the new auto exposure stuff?
No, I.
Yeah, you should. So
no, no.
I wasn't able to show you that, but there's a graph editor where you can exactly specify the point how you want the auto exposure to work. It's a separate model. It's developed by one guy who's not from the core team. He's taking a lot of effort with that. And if you want a specific feature, I'm sure if it's possible technically, and you can convince him of that, he's going to put it in. To just try that.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, the one in the front here.
Hi, I don't own a Canon, but I think there's some GPS functionality available.
Yeah, there's some Wi-Fi, some GPS sometimes.
Why you don't use that for syncing? Because this is a really, really accurate timestamp.
No, we haven't thought about that. So
okay, so maybe it's an idea.
That might be a good thing, yeah.
The man with the 42 in a t-shirt?
Yeah. Good calculation, yeah. this is not exactly about this software, but yeah. What software do you recommend for cutting the footage? Does consumer software like Apple iMovie work when you shoot in RAW, or do you have to buy really expensive software to do the cutting?
Yeah, obviously I don't want to get in this discussion what software is better, because you can do that all day. But I'd say if you just want to use consumer editing software, then you're limited in what filters you can use, what additional software you can use with that, and all that kind of stuff. But it won't be a problem. Just put the H.264 into it. If your computer has like a 2 or 4 core CPU, then it's going to work. What I'm talking about is you really are on a tight time schedule, you want the best out of it, then convert your footage into a 10-bit codec, and really you will see that you can do much more work and still play back your footage without any stuttering. So for the consumer stuff, it's probably won't matter so much. Yeah.
Sure. Okay, thank you. There's the fourth microphone.
Hi. What means of interacting with the software from the outside? For example, well, you, I think you can't fire up a Wi-Fi and put SSH on it, but for example, for editing curves, it would be much more comfortable to edit from it outside. Is there any way?
There is an USB port, and there has been some experimentation with interacting with that. I think there is there's an application for Android where you can connect your phone to your camera, and then it talks directly with Magic Lantern, and that was probably what you're talking about. I think the author stopped working on it, but it's open sourced, and if someone wants to pick it up, someone from the Android community, I think it would be perfect, like the perfect match. And also, you could probably do other fancy stuff once we are there. So there is some work on USB interaction with the outside world, but it's not working perfectly. Also, there's QR code reading for configuration files and some other stuff I'm not familiar with. Yeah.
Okay, a little bit twittered that there is a question from the internet.
It is, when will be a beta or stable release for the 5D Mark III?
Okay, so the 5D III has been out for like a year in the nightly channels, and we have not released the stable by now. That's probably because the nightlies just work, and we at some point we tried to do a stable version. And it was a lot of effort, a lot of bug fixing and testing, and it really, you know how it is, it's a hobby project, and once you introduce too much pressure on the developers, I think they can lose interest. So it was a tough decision, but at the moment there's going to be a stable version at some point again, but if you want to be absolutely sure that nothing goes wrong, use the stable version from last year. And if you want to use the new fancy stuff, it's the nightly build for you. So there is a 5D3 version that works very well. You should try it out. And at some point, there's going to be a stable one as well.
Thanks. OK, this is good. Not too much pressure on developers. So
you talked about scripting within Magic Lantern. What will that be like? Or can you explain a little bit more?
We've experimented with a lot of stuff. So there was some Lua scripting, I think. Python was discussed, but it was a bit of a memory hack. Because really, memory is really nothing against Python, but it's really difficult to get it to run and at the same time write out like 130 megabytes of raw data every second. So there is, I think it's now based on Pico-C. That was the best solution now to preserve memory. But the backend is very flexible. So if you've got a scripting language that you like, I think it would be very easy to implement a module and add scripting functionality for whatever scripting language you want to use.
Okay, so is there an AP available so that I don't have to write some numbers and
I think you could plug it in pretty easily.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Over there.
Hi.
Okay, I think now it's working. First, thank you for the great talk. And then I have a question. You mentioned the IP with a Canon thing, and you're happy that they didn't contact you yet. What about collaborating with them? If they came to you and said, oh, okay, we can help you with those data, with those specifications?
Yeah. I skipped over the slides, but obviously we are doing it for the fun. And we've introduced some functionality that no camera on the market has. So it's, it might be an obvious choice for some company like Canon to do that. So I'm sure if they'd come to us, if they'd open that communication channel, I'm sure they'd get great feedback.
What could they give you that would make your life much easier?
Oh, that's a good question. I think opening up their API, I mean, that would be like, come on in and do whatever you want with the cameras. I think they would have to be careful about that, because for a professional camera, I mean, it's not just all business. It's also they want things to be absolutely stable. They can't risk any problems. So they'd have to find a way to separate these different worlds so that customers who are not as experienced with software development and the whole stuff, they don't get the downside of it. So I think an API or some kind of documentation information, apart from the obvious legal stuff, that would be really great. That would really open up the world for us and for Canon, I think. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that would be... that's the same matter as every time.
Yeah, we'll just have to see how they play it, right?
Yeah. So, in the left front here, please.
Yes, I'm asking in public because I think maybe other 7D users might have the same problem.
Yeah.
I experimented with external audio with the 7D.
Yeah.
And, as well as a microphone, a stereo microphone, as well as an external recorder.
Yeah.
I always had the problem of noise, extremely loud noise in one channel with no signal.
Okay.
And clear but a little bit noisy signal in the other one.
Okay, I see.
And I Googled up and down. Okay.
It's very specific. So I can't really help you with that right now. Have you, I mean, the obvious stuff, you have tried changing the input information of that? So
yes.
I think the background is they use different audio chips in these cameras. They're specific systems, in some cases we found the documentation papers and we were able to really get in there, and sometimes we didn't. So I'm sorry, I don't know. You will have to contact the 7D guys directly.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll see.
Okay. So we officially have 1 or 2 minutes left, but I think there's no talk afterwards. So maybe you three are able to ask a question, and you could try to think over if you're discussing the film afterwards.
Okay, that's great.
So then we take the microphone at number one here.
You mentioned some focus points you save in the menu.
Yes.
And my question is, are they meant to be used while recording, or are they just stored?
Yes, they're meant while recording.
So it's like a focus shift.
Yes, it's like you just... save the position of the motor of your lens, then you start recording, and then you hit, go back to the focus point and moves to that, and you can hit it again, it moves there. It could even be improved. You could like act out a whole scene of points. I think that functionality is not there, but it runs while you're filming.
So is it a smooth movement, or is it just rough? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it can even ease it out and in and all that stuff. It's just software, I mean.
just software, that's good stuff. Okay, man on the...
I have one question. Yeah. Have you ever heard about warranty problems about changing the boot flag? Has Canon some rejected?
We are a bit worried about that. But so far there have been no problems from nothing. That when you have a problem with the camera and you send it in for repairs or something like that, that they have any problem with Magic Lantern on the card or the boot flag set, they just ignore it. So, and they do that for over 2.5 years now. So. No, it doesn't void the warranty in that way. Yeah.
Okay. The man on the right. Bottom.
You did not list the very old models. Like I have like a 350D that's like over 10 years old.
Yeah.
Is that because they're too old, or just nobody cares anymore?
I think that's it. I don't. I mean, you just have to find someone who wants to hack away on that kind of camera. And as the newer cameras get more and more, get cheaper and cheaper and all that kind of stuff, I think it's just for the developers, it's so much more fun to do the draw stuff. So no, I think it would be possible, you just have to find someone who wants to do it.
All right. Yeah.
Sorry.
I've got a comment to that. For the 350, I know the CHDK firmware works. So okay, there's the one which is for the smaller cameras usually.
So that's a perfect answer, actually. Oh, I didn't know that. So the CHDK, the other project for Canon cameras, sometimes for the really old cameras, they have introduced functionality for those. So just Google for CHDK and take a look at it. It might just work. Yeah.
Cool. OK. So one last question, and please try to discuss here in a smaller room.
Yeah, that sounds good.
You mentioned you don't have the moray problems and all the problems if you're recording it raw. But is it because you don't use line skipping, because you make only crop mode recording?
No, you have those problems as well. Okay. Moray is the moray and the rolling shutter. Those are the two things that really, no, the 5D3, Canon has improved the way the sensor is read out and scaled down. So that's the only camera where you don't have those moray problems. As for the rolling shutter, you just have to live with it. So RAW can't help it, can't help you with that. It's still skipping the frames because the hardware is just not capable of taking 40 megapixel images or 21 megapixels and scanning them down 30 times per second. It just can't hold up.
Yeah, sure, but you could use a smaller part of the sensor and use only the middle, and then you have like a digital zoom.
It's true. Actually, that functionality is in already. Okay. I forgot about that. So you can take a crop of the sensor. You don't have to take the whole sensor. You just take the center of it, and that gives you, if you got a good lens, you can just double your, how's it called? You can just zoom in into the image. But you're not zooming the image digitally. You're just taking a smaller crop from the sensor. So you still got a full HD record of the video. You don't have line skipping. You're right about that. And you can like turn your 70 millimeter lens into a 140 millimeter lens, or a 200 into a 400. And also, if you do the crop stuff, you can, in some, if you've got a really good card, a really fast card, then it's possible to even go above full HD. You can do 2K, 2.5K. I've seen some 4K videos by some crazy guys. But usually, it's just a few seconds. So if you do nature videos, that's fine. You can't do a feature movie with that. So,
OK, thank you. So this should be the last question. So I think you will have a good discussion here afterwards.
Yeah, I guess we can just continue.
It was a very, very good
Great.
Talk. So
you're welcome.
No, let me have a last question.
Sure.
How many time or how difficult is it to portage the whole software to new or migrate to a new camera?
So basically, what you have to do for each new camera is you have to figure out what they change in software. And then you have to find the memory addresses of the functions that we use, because we're just looking for like memcopy, or we're looking for like the audio controls. So we're hooking into the software from Canon. So we've got a list of functions we are looking for. And once you take a new camera and you dump the firmware and you look into it, you're just looking specifically for those functions. And since we've got lists and we know how many parameters there are, and we know probably where they should be. So it just takes a guy or a girl like maybe a few weeks to get everything over. And the hello world, sometimes it happens in like a few days. So that's why all those different models are supported by now.
Wow, okay, that's great. So then thank you for the talk and have a good evening.
Thanks.